Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Above Politics Show. I'm Martin Bain.
And I am Justin Case.
And hey, how you doing today, Justin?
I'm doing very well. We're still getting feedback from that Lynette Clark interview.
God, that's good news. And for those of you who don't remember or this is your first show, welcome. You can always go and listen to all the previous 17 shows, if you like, AboveTopSecret.com. Justin and I recently talked with the chair of the Alaska Independence Party. Now, you know, me looking into the US, I was thinking, Alaska Independence Party. Hey, there are more than two parties in the US, and they're a small political party in the US. They're an independent. And it was quite interesting for me to have the interview to actually understand that there are third parties in US politics. And I certainly think it was a very interesting interview that Lynette gave us. Interesting history, and all this sort of conspiracy about the founder of the party, Justin. I think, It was an insightful interview for me and opened my eyes to U.S. politics.
Oh, yes. And we'll have to have her back to talk about the nuts and bolts of that conspiracy. In an effort to balance our content, we've managed to get an interview with a small political party in Britain. Before we reveal the identity of this party, I'd just like to point out one thing. It can't be easy to start a political party, and I don't care what country you live in. The odds are just stacked against you no matter. I can't help noticing, as I look at the websites for the different third parties that I find around the world, that they've all got certain things in common.
Absolutely, and spot on, it can't be easy. We just look in the UK, we're talking to a party today, there's other third and fourth parties in the United Kingdom. You've got UKIP, you've got Veritas, you've got the Respect organization. These people might have one MP, one European MP. You're right, and the challenges facing, it's easy to put a website up. That's relatively easy. I'm sure even you and I could do that. But just thinking, how do you build momentum? You've got to have a core of people. Then, ultimately, you've got to take the big plunge. If you seriously believe in that, you've got to dig deep into your pockets and you've got to start shelling money out. And I dread to think how much the Alaska Independence Party needs to run every year. I suspect it's probably hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I suspect all these other parties in the United Kingdom need hundreds of thousands, if not millions of pounds every year just to keep still.
Well, a few weeks ago when she was talking to us, Lynette Clark chalked it all up to just being stubborn. It makes me wonder if our guest today will have anything to say about that kind of attitude.
Hopefully this person will, and I've got to agree with Lynette. I think you just have to be stubborn, you have to be passionate, and you just have to say, this is what I believe, I'm prepared to stand up for it, I'm prepared to be counted for it, but I'm also prepared that, I'm going to take hits, people are going to snipe me, potentially maybe even the mainstream parties, maybe even governments in certain countries are going to turn around and say, I don't like this party, I'm going to do whatever is possible to knock you down. You only have to look in Zimbabwe,
Heavens, yeah, the presidential candidate there who was running against Robert Mugabe had to leave the country to avoid lead poison.
Exactly. So you think, and that you would say is a fairly established political party in a rather unpleasant regime at the moment. But, just think of the challenges that, people like the Alaska Independence Party, UKIP, the Communist Party of Great Britain, Veritas, Respect, and a whole host of other parties. And even if you go into the US, I know you sort of have green parties and you have independents as well. How does an independent get elected in the States? It must be fantastically difficult.
Well, hey, you're not going to hear this subject talked about anywhere else except right here on the Above Politics Show.
Absolutely. Before we reveal the identity of our special guest, let's take care of some business.
Oh, yes. Last week's trivia challenge.
Last week, I asked who was the last country to join Comecon. And the answer was Vietnam. And just for information, as I had to dig around to find Comic-Con because someone mentioned it to me, was a Eastern Bloc trade organization or a more socialist or communist trade organization, probably similar to what the East European Economic Community was, and maybe I suppose the nearest parallel for the US might be the North America Free Trade Association or NAFTA. So that's about as close as I can get with giving examples. And the winner, Expert 11. So 500 points on their way to you, Expert.
Yes, and those are handmade right here in the ATS compound every day.
Absolutely. So it's your turn to see if you can bamboozle our listeners.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, I'm going to be totally honest here. I got a whole stack of mail recently saying, Dear Mr. Case, you do pop culture much better than you do politics. Have you ever thought about working for the BTS mix? Ha ha, very funny. Well,
that's just not nice saying you should work for the BTS mix. Great guys, you know, I don't want the guys there having a pop at me, but, you know, saying you should work for the BTS mix show.
Well, all I can do is just follow this trivia challenge up here with another pop culture question. So here it is. If your name is Ziggy and you are a supporting cast member of a popular television show, what show is it? Name the television show. That's all I'm looking for. And I'm not going to say anything else. If your name is Ziggy and you're a supporting cast member on a popular television show, that's specifically here in the United States, what show are you on?
Golly, that's going to stump. I can't even think of that one. It'll no doubt be on UK TV at some stage, and it'll be around the world at some stage. And then when I see the show, I'll go, I know the answer, but I don't right now. Hey, that's a challenging question. And speaking of challenges, we'd like to ask all our listeners a favor. When you listen to the show or you go to the show thread, or we encourage you to put a star if you think the post was good. We ask you to flag it if it was good, and also dig it. Now, to dig it, you're going to have to become a member of digit.com. But hey, that's not a big thing to do. It took me a few seconds to do. But hey, we appreciate that one. And it shows the rest of ATS just what the rest of you think of our show.
The flags, the stars, and the dig it notices, these help us get more widely circulated. The more stars, the more flags, the more digs we have, the more people pay attention to us. And if you like the show and you want to support us, then this is just one easy way to do it. You just grab the mouse and it's a few clicks, and away you go.
And it is that easy. I've got to say to people, dig it. I was another thing to register. Took me a couple of minutes. They'll send you an email to confirm your registration. Bang. Now, when I'm on ATS and I see something, or if I'm elsewhere on the web and I want to dig it, I just hit the button. It goes to the dig it website, finds my details. Bang. Done. Nice and simple.
Hey, that's the way it should be. Nice and simple. Now, when we come back from our break, we'll be talking to Simon Darby, who's the press officer for the British National Party, and you can find their website at www.bnp.org.uk.
This is Agent X. You may know me as a secret informant for Dave and Johnny's ATS Mix Show. What a lot of you may not know is that I chose their show because AboveTopSecret.com is the only website out there that covers all the subjects that I love, whether it's a conspiracy about 9/11 or the secret United Nations meetings with extraterrestrials. I know I'm going to get the need-to-know, updated information that I crave. I'd tell you more, but then I'd have to kill you. X out.
Welcome back. I'm Martin Bain, and you're listening to the Above Politics Show. We're speaking now with Simon Darby, who is the press officer for the British National Party. Hi, Simon. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Maybe the first thing to do is, you know, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with the British National Party, I don't know if you could just give us sort of a quick couple of minutes rundown maybe of the British National Party, what you stand for, and maybe a very quick potted history so that our listeners can get an understanding of where you fit into UK politics.
Yeah, that's not a problem. Well, basically, we're a nationalist party. We're not internationalists. We're not globalists. We're nationalists. The history of the party, we go back until about 1982, but really the real DNP started in 1999 when President Chairman Nick Griffin took over, completely revolutionised the party, made it more saleable, more accessible to people. And yeah, we've got some strong policies. I won't deny that. People would not call us moderates by any stretch of the imagination. We believe in telling the truth. We believe in free speech. And that upsets a few people. But we don't really care about that, to be honest, because we're set up primarily for the rights of the British people, who we feel are very much maligned, ignored, and at the moment very much disenfranchised by the Labour Party and the Conservatives.
And I'm just sort of interested in, and this is a question that is quite interesting for me, Simon, is presumably when you mean British, you mean people who were born in Northern Ireland, in Scotland, in Wales, or in England?
Yeah, and Irish people as well. People of the British Isles who can trace their ancestry back to the British Isles originating from there. We're an ethno-nationalist group, which means we are predominantly here for the English, the Irish, the Ulster people, the Welsh and the Scots.
Sort of how much political representation have you got? Because I know you haven't got any MPs in Westminster, but I think you've got a whole host of certainly councillors across the United Kingdom.
Yes, we have over 100 councillors scattered right across the United Kingdom. And perhaps our most powerful position politically, the chap with the most clout is recently elected Richard Barnbrook, who occupies a seat on the London Assembly, and that is comparable with an MP. But hopefully next year, in 2000, we'll see more elections fought on proportional representation in the European elections. Those results will be counted on the 15th of June. And we hope to have people elected into the European Parliament. And when Gordon Brown, if he's still there, has the integrity to call a general election, we believe that there are an increasing number of constituencies, parliamentary constituencies, that we have an eye on.
And you genuinely believe that you could get representation in Westminster at the next general election in the UK?
Yeah, only today we have a number of papers, The Times, The Daily Star, following on from The Guardian as well, highlighting, for instance, the progress the party's made in Stoke-on-Trent. There are three constituencies in Stoke, two of which, even now, if there was an election called, being a little bit of a betting man, I would have a dabble, definitely, on our chances.
Okay, that's certainly interesting. And one of the things that we asked our membership on AboveTopSecret.com is if they had any questions. So you've answered a couple of them, but I've just got a couple of questions from a couple of members. One called Sminky Pinky, who he's got a couple of, he's actually got 12 questions. I'm not sure I'm going to ask them all, but certainly he sort of asked several. He's sort of talking about an interview that Nick Griffin gave. He doesn't tell us when he had it, but he said his ideal Britain was during the Elizabethan age, as in Elizabeth the First. I'm just sort of curious, is that an ideal that the party still holds to, that was sort of seen as a dream time for Britain and for England?
The Elizabethan age was a golden age, yes it was. But I don't think Nick had a demographic analogy in mind. I really think it was a time when England, Britain was a major power. It had a considerable amount of power, influence and pride in itself, and I think that's what Nick meant. Obviously, we have a population here now of about 60 million people, which is due to grow to 70 and then 80 million in the next few years. That is unsustainable, and that unfortunately is something we're going to have to put right if we're going to have any kind of a future. You know, we're looking at perhaps moving to a population in this country somewhat more sustainable of around about 40 million people. That's what we're looking for. So if you wanted to draw anything from that with regards the Elizabethan analogy, yes, you could possibly say that Nick may have meant that.
On a policy level, how does your party advocate trying to achieve that sustainable population?
Well, it's changing all the time. I mean, we are looking. I mean, I'm sure you sound like two pretty shrewd guys with an eye on international events, global politics, geopolitics, and if you look at what is very much becoming extremely obvious, is an oncoming energy crisis. We are running out of oil. And if you look at the concept of that, what it implies, it is truly frightening. It really is. And the idea that this planet can sustain billions of people, it simply isn't viable, I'm afraid. And we are going to have some kind of a population reduction. If you look at what peak oil predicts, the theory and the practicalities of peak oil, we are living and have been living well above our means, and I'm afraid we're going to have to take that into account. And I'm afraid the times they are changing. There's no two ways about that.
So, if you sort of take what you've said there, Simon.
Mm-hmm.
If you take that, does that implicitly mean that you would say that there are people in the United Kingdom who should not be here because they are not British?
Oh, certainly. That certainly is the case. I won't shirk away from that at all. There are something like 1 million illegal immigrants in Britain. There are people who have come here through no fault of their own, through mainly the fault of treacherous politicians, who have come here merely to undercut our workforce. And yes, when times are good, you can get away with that. But with this credit crunch, which I believe has hardly started, to be honest, we're in for far, far worse, then the implications of flooding our market with cheap labour, cheap foreign labour, really will. It will be a situation where the chickens do come home to roost.
And I think that leads on to most people would then turn round, I think, and say, does that implicitly mean that the British National Party is a racist party in that sense?
Well, it depends what you mean by a racist. I think the white community worldwide are growing particularly sick and tired of hearing that word every time that white people, or in this case British people, stand up for our rights. We're immediately confronted with this buzzword, this word invented by Leon Trotsky, designed to stigmatize any argument against what is basically a Marxist ideology. It's one of those nothing words that has been used as a psychological club to hit white people with for decades. And you know, wherever I go in the world, and I've been to America several times, and talking to ordinary Americans as well, people really have enough of listening to that word. And it's so unbelievably crude the way it's used to play on the altruism and sense of fair play of our community. And it's about time that people really open their eyes as to why words like that are being used.
And sort of, how do you sort of feel that, you know, some people, you know, and we and Justin and I have already had the observation made to us when we said we were going to talk to the British National Party. They sort of turned and said, well, you know, you're giving them oxygen. So, you know, and certainly in the UK, there are a lot of people who say that you shouldn't entertain a dialogue with the British National Party. So, you know, how does that change your thinking? Because, you know, clearly every time Nick Griffin, you know, potentially goes on the TV, you get hundreds of people writing in there saying you shouldn't have these people on there, these people are evil, all that type of thing. And I'm just curious to see how you live with that on a day-to-day basis and how that influences maybe how you present the party to the British people.
Well, every time Nick goes on the television, we get hundreds and hundreds of people who want to join, to be honest. The vote goes up. It's the same with all ideologies. Eventually, they have their time. And what we've got here is a liberal, multicultural, fluffy communist Marxist ideology that has had its time. And as much as it tries to protect itself from competition, in the end, it will fail. The truth comes out in the end. Maybe you can bully Soviet peasants into submission, which is what happened in the Soviet Union, of course. But you're dealing here with a highly educated Western European nation, and our people really won't put up with this.
And how much do you feel the success of, say, the Scottish Nationalists and the Welsh Nationalists of Plaid Cymru, do you see that you're getting, you see that as a groundswell? And how do you see the British National Party fitting into the fact that, you know, there is a strong national movement in Wales, as a strong, you know, actually there's an administration in Scotland at the moment?
Well, actually, it's a fallacy, because neither the Welsh Plaid Cymru or the Scottish Nationalists are nationalists at all, not in an economic or in an ethnic sense. They're quite happy for people from all over the world to come into Wales and into Scotland. They're quite happy for the natural Welsh and Scottish cultures to be diluted, and they're quite happy to subscribe to the European Union. So they're not nationalists. By comparing us, and I know it's not intentional, but by comparing the British National Party with the Scottish National Party and the Welsh nationalists, it's actually a great insult.
You've brought the subject of Europe up. Where does the British National Party sit on the European Union and Britain's membership of the Economic Union?
Well, we wouldn't want to be a member of the European Union, either economically or politically. In 1973, we were tricked by Edward Heath and the Conservative government into subscribing to what he referred to as a trade agreement, where he said it won't be any loss of sovereignty. And 35 years down the road now, we can see what it's all about. Plans for a common European police force, the abolition of England, actually proposing a region that joins part of Kent to the to part of France. It is a breakup. It is a scandalous attempt to impose a Euro-federalist state and power over the British people and indeed everybody else. We've got nothing against European people. In fact, we've got many things in common with other European nationalists, but we believe the European peoples, should I say, are so different that they do deserve and should have the right to govern themselves. The real language of Europe is that of science, and we have no problem with sitting down with Europeans in the European Union to discuss science and environmental problems, but poking their noses and our noses into intrinsic national affairs is simply not on, I'm afraid.
Now, my question is, how are you going to frame your sovereignty argument as we go into the next decade? Globalization is going to become more and more the norm, so how are you going to sell your brand of sovereignty when the term is going to mean something else to an entirely new generation of politicians with, you know, as we go into the next decade?
Well, I'd like to disagree with you, if you don't mind, but I do feel that it isn't a foregone conclusion that the world is going to become more globalist. As I've mentioned before, we do have a major energy crisis looming, and rather than, for instance, to facilitate cheap travel or the importation of cheap goods, I think the opposite will be coming about. We're looking at studies whereby people are growing their own food, relying less on transported in goods, less on foreign labour, and I think the world is going to become a more dangerous place as nations squabble over oil, and I think the nationalist sentiment and nationalist ideology will become probably more to the fore than it has been before. So I don't see it as a foregone conclusion that we follow the last 20 years of internationalism and globalism with 10 years of the same. Times change, and I do believe that there are large changes on the way. I think the British people now are beginning to realize that, that there's never been an argument against fiscal globalism. And yet, you look now at all the economic measures that Gordon Brown and Darling, the wretched Chancellor of the Exchequer, who have all the measures they put in, pumping billions of pounds into the economy, because we don't have a closed economy, a nationalist economy, because we are a part of the global economy, those measures merely leak out. There's nothing that we can do. And people now are becoming receptive, albeit via the ringing in the pockets, or lack of it, so to speak, to other ideologies and other messages.
Now, I understand what you're saying, because here in the United States, a lot of people have had nothing good at all to say about NAFTA, which is the North American Free Trade Agreement, because it looks and it feels like to us that our economy has been gutted, in that all of our heavy industrial capacity has been outsourced to other countries where the labor is much cheaper. So when you say that people are going to re-examine their positions on a national sovereignty, are you suggesting that it's going to be largely motivated by this economic downturn?
I think so. One of the shocking things when I last visited America was the number of foreign cars that were being sold. As I said, I've been to America several times over the years, and I've always found Americans to be very proud of their country, probably more so in many ways than the British people. They're certainly more ostentatious in their display of patriotism. And looking at papers and looking at television adverts while I was last over there, I was in Louisiana, in New Orleans, that kind of way. And I couldn't believe the number of foreign companies that are now muscling in on America. And really, you get to a stage where you have a population that have nothing to do. And you've got problems in America with people not having any sense of purpose or any sense of identity, not having a real job. You can have these agency jobs where you earn, I don't know, what must be $8 an hour, the equivalent of our minimum wage, £4 an hour. But you don't have any proper industry. And when you have people dragged into this low economy, welfare economy, then you have massive social problems. And I see in America that is the case. In fact, we have whole working communities in the same way that whole working class communities in Britain, in the form of steel industries and the mine industries and the car industries, are simply going to waste, literally.
So who do you like to be the next American president?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? You don't really have a choice in America. It's unfortunate. You just have a two-party policy, and with one or two minor differences, you get the same no matter what the election result. I mean, I don't wish to pry into American affairs, but if you want my opinion, there should be a third party, a proper third party in America that has a nationalist or quasi-nationalist agenda or an alternative, something there for the American people rather than something that is linked to globalism, internationalism, policing the world. And perhaps there should be a party that looked after the interests of the American people and put those people, the people that built America, first and foremost.
Where does the sort of BNP stand on the UK's involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, we regard it as an illegal war. We make no bones about it. We don't like the spread of Islamic fundamentalism in Britain, and we bitterly resent the fact that we are being colonised by a very aggressive and very sly and devious Islamic entity. But having said that, what Muslims do in their own countries is entirely up to them. It's not to us, either the Americans or the British, to interfere in their way of life. If they want to treat their women like cattle, that's up to them. It's not our affair. It's up to those Iraqi men and women who currently are fleeing their country, running away to countries like ours, to do something about it. It isn't for us to fight their wars. We have certainly got enough problems in our country, and I would imagine the Americans have far more important things to do than to involve themselves in wars with people who are pretty much ungrateful, pretty much loathe and hate us both, and we would get out of the Middle East as quick as we possibly could.
So how do you feel when the Archbishop, who's the head of the Church of England, turns round and says maybe we ought to enshrine some parts of Sharia law into UK law?
Well, that's an interesting question, because on one hand I look at this and say, you know, is this guy for real? You know, is he actually helping us out here? Is he actually being so absolutely ridiculous that he's actually trying to swell our vote, which is what he does when he comes out with things like this. But it's probably more likely that the Archbishop is indicative of the kind of left-wing Marxist members of the church. They've infested the church pretty much so. Church numbers in this country are declining rapidly. Churches are being lost at an incredible rate. And it's because of this lack of Christian identity that the church now preaches. I must admit, if I was to go to a church, I'd rather go to a black church, at least black clerics, black bishops, black vicars, pastors have the integrity to actually preach the gospel and scripture.
I think we're sort of coming almost to the nearing the end of our interview with you, Simon. One of the things it would be useful if our listeners wanted to know more information about the British National Party, is there a website they could go to?
There certainly is. It is the most popular website in British politics. We have a huge number of hits. It's www.bnp.org.uk. I repeat that. www.bnp.org.uk. www.justin.org.uk.
Okay, well, I'd like to certainly, on behalf of Justin and myself, say thank you very much, Simon. We appreciate your time. I know it's late in the evening. It's certainly been an interesting interview, and certainly maybe at some stage in the future, I certainly suspect we might like to get you back on the show, as I think you've certainly educated, hopefully, some people in what the British National Party stands for. Presumably that would be okay to maybe get you on for a future show?
Yeah, it'd be a pleasure. Be a pleasure.
Thank you very much for your time.
That's not a problem at all. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good night now.
Good night.
And we'll be back after a short break to talk about what we heard from Simon Darby.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Rabbit.
And I'm his co-host, Johnny Anonymous. And we do a show called The ATS Mix on AboveTopSecret.com. You know, after Dave and I get through doing one of our shows, we like going and listening to one of our sister shows on the Above Network, LLC.
And you know, Johnny, one of my favorites is over on BelowTopSecret.com. It's the new and hilarious BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock, his partner. When you're looking for lighter entertainment, these guys will rock your world with the best of sports, news, television, radio, and general discussion.
Oh, good.
They feature member posts, member on-air conversations, and celebrity interviews. This is a show that everyone is really going to enjoy.
And if by chance politics might be more your cup of tea, then AbovePolitics.com is going to be right up your alley. You know, the Above Politics show features Martin Bain and Justin Case, and they give you insightful and informative information that you're just not going to find anywhere else. They feature intelligent conversation on posts from our members, member interviews about their stance and platforms, as well as interviews with noted political figures and authors. You know, Dave, this really is your one-stop political shop.
And you're right about that, Johninator. So come join us all. Deny ignorance with Johnny and I on the ATS Mix Show.
Deny boredom with the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock.
And deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with our friends Martin Bain and Justin Case.
And then you too can be a part of the revolution. Above Network LLC.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Above Politics Show, and I'm Martin Bain. And hey, that was an interesting interview, I've got to say. It's always interesting to bring people who are seen as being extremist, I suppose, would be something some people would say about the British National Party. But it's really interesting to get someone who'd come on the show. And clearly Simon had an understanding of the issues, but also understanding of sort of not only UK politics, but global politics.
Very true. Now, I want to say one thing here as an American. We place a great deal of stock in our Constitution, and the First Amendment to the Constitution, which begins our Bill of Rights, is freedom of speech. So it's part of our social fabric that we understand that occasionally we're going to hear from people that we're not going to appreciate their message. We're not going to be particularly tolerant of their message in some cases, but we do recognize that they have the same right to speak that anybody else does.
Absolutely, and clearly in the UK, I don't think we actually have a constitution in the sense that the US has, and it's an interesting argument about whether we actually have the right to free speech in the United Kingdom. I think implicitly people would say that it's been enshrined and it's been upheld, and maybe there have been legal precedents, maybe, but we don't clearly have an act of parliament that says we can say whatever we like. And there are moves in the United Kingdom to try and make racial and religious hatred crimes. I mean, certainly you can be prosecuted in the United Kingdom for racial abusing someone or for religious crimes, whereas that's interesting in the States. You know, I can go to the US and say whatever I like, or if I'm a US citizen, and if someone objects, tough, because it's enshrined in your constitution, Justin, that you have the right to say whatever you like.
Absolutely, and we do have our fair share of race haters and bigots who speak to the country on a daily basis. They do this through websites, newsletters, podcasts, videocasts, and even sometimes a widely circulated radio program.
One of the things that was interesting for me to understand more about the British National Party is that I suppose a lot of people in the UK, and if you disagree with what I'm saying, You know where to go. Come to AboveTopSecret.com, the ATS Mix. Find the show. This is show number 18. Go to the show thread. If you disagree with what I say, you disagree with what Justin says, you like what we say, you want to post a comment about what Simon's had to say, that's the place to do it. But it was interesting for me to understand that, you know, clearly Simon was an intelligent, educated man, and clearly he understands that there's a lot more going on in politics. It's not just about what's going on in the United Kingdom, you know. And I thought his comments about, you know, this battle is the wrong word, but this sort of thought process between greater globalization or more nationalization was certainly an interesting one to see, you know, that there's two extreme arguments going on. People saying the world is becoming smaller and more connected, but then potentially you've got people like the British National Party, and there are other nationalist parties across Europe and across the world who are saying, hang on, is globalization the way to go, or should we maybe be starting to look inwards? And, you know, his points about, you know, the American economy and, you know, I have to say the British economy are absolutely true. You can't dispute what he's saying, that both our countries have had our heavy industry, our heavy manufacturing gutted, and, you know, those jobs sent away to low-cost economies.
The nationalist sovereignty argument is only going to get more heated as the century progresses, because in many respects, I think, globalism is anti-nationalist.
Absolutely. I mean, if you take that view, absolutely, Justin, I agree with that one. You know, that, you know, because, I mean, I talk to people and people say, you know, who, you know, where do you come from? And you get, I mean, certainly, you know, when I'm in Europe, you will get people in Europe from, say, I take, for example, from France, from the Netherlands, from Belgium, from Germany. Sometimes those people will call themselves Europeans first, which I think is interesting. And it starts to go onto that argument that I don't think of myself on a national viewpoint. I now think of myself as a European. And interestingly, one of the things I see in the US, and I personally see it more in when I'm talking to friends in Texas, is a lot of Texans will not automatically call themselves Americans first. They will call themselves Texans first, then American.
Oh, I get the same thing when I travel around Alaska. As you heard from Lynette Clark, a lot of them tend to think of themselves as Alaskans first and Americans second. And all I can say as an Alaskan, that, you know, I'm rather proud of my Texan cousins, because you know, they put up with a lot being the second largest state in the union, and I think they bear that burden well.
I can see you're going to get so much grief from Dave Rabbit for that one.
You know, speaking of grief, I'm sure it's going to break your heart to know that next week the U.S. presidential primaries come to an end.
Woohoo! Or is that a little too enthusiastic, Justin?
Might be a little too enthusiastic, but, you know, we try to be honest with our listeners, so you might as well just go with it. There's a lot of people that are going to be very happy that this process is over with, because we forget, or rather, you know, we're so fatigued that we can't help forgetting. But instead of this primary process lasting 8 months, as it normally would, this primary process has lasted almost 2 years. I mean, 17 months. Holy cow. They started, everybody who wanted the presidency started to run back in January of 07. And, you know, here we are. We're down to the final three. And, by the way, I just want to let you know, I did actually find a bugler. We're going to have a bugler come into the studio next week to play taps for Hillary Clinton's campaign.
I'm hard-pressed with that, because, you know, you and I have called people dead in the past. We only have to talk about President Jimmy Carter, and he's still alive. Yeah, I have to agree with you. I suspect Hillary is sort of certainly getting close to listening to the last post, to sort of continue with sort of a military theme here. Calling the bugler in right now, we could be slightly premature, because ultimately, you know, you've still got the superdelegates, you've still got all the court cases, and you've still got Hillary, who will turn round and say, but I have a majority of the popular vote, the rank and file membership of the Democratic Party. She will say a majority of them have voted for Hillary Clinton and not Barack Obama.
I mean, love him or hate him, the primaries will be over with, and both party apparatuses, the Democrats and Republicans, will be looking forward to getting on to the general election. So, you know, they're just not going to put up with any shenanigans from her. If she wants to try and game the system to steal the presidency, she will be squashed like the bug that she is.
You mean there are more elections to come? So not only after 17 months of a primary, you still then have, you know, the next umpteen months until November, when your TV screens are going to be filled with, you know, this commercial paid for by the, you know, Republicans of Maine, you know, bashing, we probably wouldn't be unrealistic to say, Barack Obama. And then you're going to be getting, you know, paid for by the friends of Barack Obama, you know, bashing Senator McCain.
A little Freudian slip there, huh? Banishing Senator McCain?
Banishing, yeah, good point there. Yes, maybe not banishing.
Well, it's true, by golly. The whole process is not over with, and no, nobody gets a rest, nobody gets a breather, nobody gets a chance for a cup of tea. You know, as soon as the last ballot is counted, then they go into general election mode, and then going to get messy, because then all the 527s, whom the candidates have no control over, come out of the woodwork, and wow, you talk about wild commercials on TV. It'll be incredible.
Okay. Just for people who don't know what a 527 is, Justin, because not everyone is au fait with U.S. politics.
Okay, 527 is a legal classification for a special interest group that has no affiliation with a candidate but wishes to represent the candidate. For example, you know, somebody could start a pro-Obama political interest group. They can pass the hat. They can gather up some money, and they can make a commercial that says anything about a candidate Obama that they like, as long as it's not libel, as long as it's not slanderous. And in the case of our hypothetical example, if they chose to be in favor of him, then they can buy television airtime wherever they want it and run their commercial wherever they can get somebody to accept it. And these 527 groups will not do just television. They'll do radio. They'll do print. There will be podcasts aplenty, although none of them will be as good as ours.
Absolutely. And I'm just interested in that one. Does that mean that they can only say things about the candidate they support, or can they turn around? And I see this sometimes in, you know, I've certainly seen some television campaigns that sort of turn around and say, rather than focusing on what their candidate says, they'll focus on the things that the other candidate hasn't done. And I remember seeing some about, you know, maybe going for governor, saying, you know, this governor's let 14 criminals out on weekend passes and 13 of them committed crime. So presumably the 527s can also have an advert that basically highlights the bad points of the opponent.
Those of you who will remember the 2004 elections will remember that every time candidate John Kerry said or did anything stupid, the 527 groups that were opposed to him got a hold of those sound bites, got a hold of those video clips, and splashed them everywhere. And the jargon term swift boating was invented to describe what was happening to candidate Kerry, because as it turned out, he very seriously fudged his war record, and a lot of the people that he served with on the military swift boats during the Vietnam period were brought out before the cameras to naysay what he said, and that's how you got the term swift boating.
And do you think that Senator McCain is going to suffer from that?
In a way, yes. There will definitely be a great deal of ageism thrown in his direction. Some of his past verbal gaffes will be brought up and looped, but I don't want to shy away from Hillary too much here. You know, she's been such a trooper that I really do think it's appropriate for us to play taps for her presidential campaign. This doesn't rule out the vice presidency. I'm just saying that her bid for the presidency is over and done with, and it's just time to throw dirt on the sucker.
On that somber and solemn note, I think we better clear the studio. I'm Martin Bain.
And I'm Justin Case. We'll see you next time on the Above Politics Show.
Being part of the revolution is easy. Star, flag, and dig the mother. Whether you find a great topic or really enjoy one of our podcasts, you can make it even better by taking the time to show your appreciation and applause by giving the material a star, then flag, and finally a dig. This will draw attention to the thread or podcast, and by doing so, you're making a difference and improving the ATS, BTS, and Above Politics experience. So remember, when you find a great thread or podcast, star, flag, and dig the mother. Thanks for being part of the revolution from your friends at the Above Networks, LLC.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.